This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 8th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 434. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. Happy early Valentine's Day. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, checking in with Brian Calder, past president of the Point Roberts Chamber of Commerce, how the isolated Washington State community is struggling in the second year of Trump 2.0. And Andy Everson, a Comox Valley, BC Indigenous artist on the history of the Seattle Seahawks original logo. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Super Bowl weekend, a time when a lot of Americans and Canadians will be watching the big game on Sunday. Seahawks are big from all the way from Oregon to Alaska, and a lot of British Columbia fans right there in the middle. And British Columbia fans back in 2014 and 2015, when the Seahawks were last in the Super Bowl back-to-back, a lot of them would be willing to go across the border, but maybe not so much now since the second Trump administration began last year. Canadian tourism, Canadian visits to the United States have gone way down as a reaction to Trump's trade war. That has not been good news for Point Roberts. Point Roberts, which already suffered for several years during the pandemic, is suffering again. And to talk to me about that is the past president of the Point Roberts Chamber of Commerce, Brian Calder.
During the COVID lockdown, and that was March 2020, we were locked down for a full 20 consecutive months, lost two summers. And so during that time, when it came back open again, the border opened again, we never gained more than 70% of what we had. And we've been struggling through that. Because when losing the summers, it broke people's habits. People were default to Point Roberts. We went there every summer, period. And 70% of our properties are owned by Canadians. Nowhere else in North America, I think that applies, that quote unquote foreigners, I don't consider them because I'm dual myself, and 50% of us who live here are dual citizens. But notwithstanding, 90% of our economy comes from Greater Vancouver mainly, but certainly Canadians. And so when they own 90% of the market here, 70% of the properties, all of our power, all of our water comes through Delta from Canada. So we're basically, Canada owns Point Roberts. They just weren't given the keys. And so here we go, never recovering more than 70%, as we talked about, from COVID lockdown. And then we get hit with tariffs, and that took another 20%. So an actual figure, I monitor the monthly publications from Transport USA. They do every border, and they publish the crossings every month. And we had in pre-COVID, December 2019, we had 157,000 visits, and we lost 50,000. So we're down 50,000 now. You think Point Roberts does 100,000, and now we're down to 50. No one thinks we get that kind of volume, but we in fact do. We're about the third busiest border in the North. 49th parallel. And so 50,000 people lost. If you consider that each person spent $20, and I would argue that's on the low side, that's $1 million a month. Now that is huge impact negatively to our economy, and no let up in sight. I don't see any let up in the President of the United States insulting Canadians, and I don't blame them one little bit. That annoys the heck out of me. And it's counterproductive, and there's no winners, not even him. Not the United States. They don't win. But I mean, if Canada ever starts to get real serious and retaliation cuts off power and water, look out. I mean, that Michigan, all the border towns, certainly ours, will be dead in the water. So that's why I keep speaking up about it, because it just does not make any sense whatsoever. And the longest serving, as you well know, you've been part of it, the longest 150 years of being allies, the biggest defender of the United States was Canada. And he's just torn that to shreds. Just goofy, absolutely goofy.
How has it affected the businesses in Point Roberts? There's a marina, there's a golf course, there's several gas stations, grocery store. There were facilities that would handle parcel deliveries for cross-border e-commerce shopping. Where is the local economy from that standpoint? Have some closed down, downsized? What has happened to the businesses?
Devastated, no let up in sight. Unfortunately, we're going to lose more. I mean, they just can't hang on. As you also know, Bob, you come here regularly, is the gas stations are a big business. I mean, for 1,100 people, we've got five gas stations. What does that tell you? We need one for the locals. That's all. Well, we lost one gas station. The Speedway Gas closed and took out the pumps and everything, and it's up for sale, the building and the land. But it's been remediated and it's done. So that's one closed already. Then our longest serving parcel post, been in business 24 years, run by my niece, part owner, closed permanently. Had something like 10,000 clients over the years that they kept contact. Not, they didn't deal with them every day, but I mean, they used their services. And they had to completely close. They at one point they had 11 employees. Well, that's devastating for a little town like us to lose all of that. And that business is way down. Similarly in Blaine, of course, I think they've lost two parcel posts. I can't see that we're not going to lose one or two more, because we had seven at one time. So it tells you that also it amplifies the dependency on Canadians, because those parcel posts weren't American. They were American owned, but the Canadians were the ones that drove that business as clients, same as the gasoline. And what we saw was people not coming as often because we mentioned the border closing during COVID, but also then the anti-Canadian threatening their sovereignty and everything from the belligerent president of the United States. And they just said, enough is enough. And they quit coming. And then, of course, they had the carbon tax taken off, which cut the spread between U.S. and Canadian gas prices. And so all of those things in combination mean that people aren't coming to the grocery store and the restaurant, and the restaurants of the Reef has closed for 4 months during these times, because it's just not enough activity to bother keeping it open. It's supposed to open in mid-March, and we'll see how that goes. And the other restaurants hanging on, the marketplace, God bless her for staying open. If it was me, I wouldn't.
Yeah, the Reef was a big magnet to the last time the Seahawks were in the Super Bowl back in 2014, 2015, 2014, the big win over the Denver Broncos, and 2015, the big disappointment against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. But the Reef was a big magnet for Canadians who wanted to go somewhere unique, right beside the water and the beach there, and enjoy football, the biggest day of football in especially in the Pacific Northwest. And as you say, the Reef is closed right now, and it's for sale.
Been for sale for a couple of years, and they just haven't met Nick Kaniski's price yet. So he still owns it, and he's still operating it. But again, it's closed during the winter, and this makes perfect business sense. But not great for the community, but if the customers aren't there, Kauai open, and the customers aren't there. On the football side, the Pier restaurant is putting an event on the weekend. So we've got a bit smaller venue, but notwithstanding, it's going to be catering to patrons, and hopefully some of those will be Canadians.
So the Pier that's at the marina, is it more for members, or is it wide open to the public?
Wide open. It's a separate organization owns it from the marina. The marina leases them the land, the building side, to operate the restaurant out of. And so she's putting on big event for her. Yeah.
Now, the Super Bowl is, of course, a big televised event happening in Santa Clara, California. The Seahawks are favored to win. There is a bigger event coming to both Seattle and Vancouver that perhaps Point Roberts could capitalize on, the FIFA World Cup in June and July. There's a lot of news here in Vancouver that there's a shortage of accommodations, especially affordable accommodations for ticket holders who aren't in the 1%, as they say. Is it possible that Point Roberts could perhaps be able to generate some local revenue from that? Because there are also restrictions on the Canadian side of the border in British Columbia on Airbnb and VRBO.
You're reading my mind, Bob. We figure that with the people coming, say, from Seattle or Washington or Oregon, and if they are trailer or motorhome people, we've got lots of space here. We've got our park, Lighthouse Park. We've got Sunny Point recreation area, and we could put them up here. And as you mentioned, the parking is going to be horrendous. And they're talking as far out as Abbotsford or something once they closed downtown Vancouver to the parking and so forth. So they could basically, especially Americans, because they're coming to American turf, they could commute from here. There's a bus at the top of Deep Maker Park here by the border, and they could go down to the River Rock, get on the ALR, and be downtown very quickly, or take the vehicle if they wish, of course. But we're closer to downtown Vancouver than Abbotsford is, or even Langley, and probably less traffic. But notwithstanding, they could be here, park. And we could even, they could leave their car if they just had a car and park here, and we could take them by bus down into their hotel and leave them there, and then they could call us back and come back and pick them up. So we're very much working on that here to try and market that and get the word out that they could base out of here. Their campgrounds, tenting, all of that, or Airbnbs. We've got several of those here too, probably 30 or so of those. So, yeah. We would hope we'd get a good little economic blip and an awareness of our situation.
The previous governor, Jay Inslee, came to Point Roberts during the pandemic. Was concerned about the economic impacts of the pandemic. But so far, Bob Ferguson, who's been in office for about a year, has he paid any attention to Point Roberts?
No. I know part of it is the budget. He's got his hands full with trying to figure out the money side. And that's only going to get worse because of the tariff situation, because Washington State is very dependent on commercial flow of lumber and everything coming through from British Columbia into Washington. And so with that revenue gone, parcel post, as we talked about earlier, gasoline sales, that revenue has diminished significantly. And we understand about, Sumas and Linden and Ferndale and Blaine and Bellingham are impacted. We understand it better than anyone because we're impacted 20% more. So whatever they're going through, add 20% to the Point Roberts situation. But we'd still love to see them get here. Just found out from some Vancouver publications that Rachel Maddow's coming to UBC on the 5th of March. And we've taken that opportunity to invite her to come to Point Roberts and help us out, to put us on the map, because as one of the best media journalists, people around. She's got quite an impact, and we'd certainly benefit from that. So we're crossing our fingers, hoping she'll accept.
You're a dual citizen, Canadian and American, living in Point Roberts, but you've got quite a history here in Vancouver. You were elected to Vancouver City Council.
Yes.
Back 55 years ago, and you're reflecting on the world of politics, economics, social and environmental trends. You're seeing a lot of things that are repeating.
Got up the other morning and I go back and I'm thinking about all the war stuff. They're firing all that garbage into our environment and destroying things we've built and around the world. And I thought, this isn't a lot different than other than the major war stuff, but the environmental impact on us, we're still dealing with it now. And I, when I first got elected, I was running on an environmental message, clean up False Creek, stop the elevated freeway through Chinatown. It was going to be elevated along Pender. We call that racist move because it would be on the second floor blocking all the buildings in Chinatown. And so it was a team organization we put together and prevailed, stopped that and redeveloped Paul Street, got rid of the polluting industries. Remember, we had beehive burners in the old days. I mean, it was and a big shipyard. And so anyhow, I've got thinking about that, and I thought, not a lot's changed here. Like, we're still talking about affordable housing, our children's future, environmental, traffic, all the same things that we're talking about today. What are we just seem to be churning and treading? Well, I have to go, what would it take? And I thought, what did it take back then in 1970? It took the team organization. We were all neophytes. We weren't political organizations. We weren't Republican or Democrat. We tended to be social conscious people. Art Phillips, Hardwick, all of us. We ended up taking over Parchport School Board and Mayor and Council. We got 24 of the 27 seats went to team. And there we were. And as basically neophytes, I mean, we're business people and all those good things, but we weren't politicians. And I think that was the difference, because we actually got something done. We made decisions and we acted. And if you leave it to the typical politician, look at the U.S. government. It's any of the governments. They're just mentally constipated. They don't have the juice to get in and actually swing the stick and score the goal and ask for the order. They wallow and churn. Oh, well, we can't. You're the government. You can do anything you want. I think it was Glenn Clark, the premier at that time. And someone said something about he couldn't do something. And he said, we're the government. We can do anything we want. And they do. So when they tell me, politicians, and I lock horns with them regularly down here, and they tell me they can't, I say, no. Another four-letter word, won't. You can. You just won't. You don't have the guts. Someone will whine and snivel at you instead of saying, look, this is the right thing to do. Do it. I remember back in the days when I'd be on Webster, and he'd say, you can come on my show anytime. He said, I've never seen anything like it. I said, what? What are you talking about? He said, you actually tell people not to vote for you. He said, I've never heard a politician do that in my life. I said, well, I don't want them to be misled. This is what I stand for. If you don't like it, don't vote for me. And I went on the polls. I went from ninth to third after running the second term. And then I got out. I didn't get thrown out. I just said I'd done what I wanted to do. And why would I hang around? It shouldn't be a job and a career. That's what I'm getting at. Like the conservative leader in Canada, he's never had a real job, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of payrolls too, and that stiffens your back up too when you start meeting a payroll and you own the company and you're the last one paid. I proposed term limits. I mean, at the time we went into the team in NPA, Nonpartisan Association, and then we had Harry Rankin, and the average age was 55, and some of us were 30, and we brought that average down. So it was a bunch of elder people, like currently my age. I shouldn't talk too much about elderly, but they were afraid to get fired. And we weren't afraid to get fired. If you don't like us, don't vote for us. That's fine. Well, you're supposed to kowtow to us and tell us what we want to hear. Nope.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of professional politicians, career politicians in British Columbia get ready for the fall municipal elections around the province. And there's a lot of questions on how Canadian finances have been also shepherded at this time, a very crucial time. Still a lot of questions on major infrastructure projects that have gone out of control, especially the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, the project of Metro Vancouver that's going to cost close to $4 billion, should have cost a fraction of that, $700 million. A lot of questions on how Canadians are being governed at this time, and at a time when whatever Donald Trump does, Donald Trump has to sneeze in the morning and it'll distract Canadians from whatever their own politicians are doing. It's not a healthy atmosphere at all.
Good example for an age limit as well as a term limit.
That's definitely a good question, especially for someone who's in power in the White House. Here in Canada, we do have age limits in the Senate. 75 is the mandatory retirement age at the Senate. So our Senate is not elected like the American Senate is. But
Canada has much better rules in some cases, and particularly, in my opinion, the legal side of it. The frivolous lawsuits the U.S. allows are just bizarre. The British system for Australia, Canada, and Great Britain is much more sensible as far as I'm concerned about what they'll allow and what they won't allow to proceed. And this frivolous stuff just doesn't cut it in Canada.
Brian Calder, past president of the Point Roberts Chamber of Commerce, a former city councillor here in Vancouver, BC, is a dual Canadian and American citizen living in Point Roberts, a beautiful community. Visit there if you can. It's connected to Delta, British Columbia. Great place for a day trip.
Thank you, Bob. It's always a pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Andy Everson. He is a Northwest Coast artist in Comox, British Columbia, with Totem Design House. He's a big Seahawks fan, wearing his Steve Largent jersey. And he's got an interesting story to tell about the connection of his people with the Seahawks that goes back originally to the 1976 logo, but even longer before that. Now, Andy, in 2014, the Seahawks were celebrating their first Super Bowl championship. And you went down to Seattle when the Burke Museum brought back a very special mask, a mask that came from your part of the world. And tell us the story about that mask, which became the inspiration for the original Seahawks logo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, growing up, I was always attracted to the Seahawks logo. I always thought it was really cool because it looked kind of Northwest Coast art style. And in 2014, after the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, the Burke Museum started to research into the origin of the logo a little more closely, because some of that information had been kind of lost or disappeared through time. And they started to research where this design could have possibly come from. And what they discovered was it was based off of a Kwakwaka'wakw transformation mask, a transformation mask that comes from my people on Vancouver Island. And the design firm in 75, 76, that was designing the logo, they were given a design brief that they were to kind of design it around Northwest Coast art, at least influenced by. And so what they did is they actually picked up a book, and the particular book that they they referenced was this one, which was originally published in 1950. It's The Art of the Northwest Coast Indians. And when you flip open the book, you can see quite clearly the profile of the original Seahawks logo. And so literally they traced elements of this design and used it for the basis of their of the logo. And what this does, what this mask is it's a transformation mask, which means that when the dancer comes out, they come out as an, you know, as an eagle or a thunderbird, depending on how you want to look at this piece. And it opens up, and this is what it looks like when it opens up. And so the Burke Museum did the research on this mask, and they were able to locate where it was currently held. And in this book, what was interesting is that it says it was in the collection of Max Ernst, who is a famous surrealist artist. And so a lot of surrealists back in the late 40s started collecting Northwest Coast art and were inspired by Northwest Coast art in their surrealist paintings. And so it belonged in the collection of Max Ernst and eventually found its way to the University of Maine Hudson Museum. And so the Burke was able to borrow this piece from the Hudson Museum, have it shipped over to Seattle in, you know, in November of 2014. And they called me up and asked if I could come down and be there for the unveiling. And, you know, I'm friends with one of the curators at the Burke Museum, Katie Bunn Marcuse. And so she called me up and asked if I'd be able to come down. So I brought down a leader of one of my dance groups, George Taylor, and we went down to Seattle via the Clipper, headed down there. And we were able to attend this event where they literally did an unveiling of this mask, and I was able to dance for it in respect to this mask, coming back to the Pacific Northwest, even for a brief period of time, give it the respect that it's due.
To watch the rest of the interview with Andy Everson, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Taiwan news, Taiwan highlighted in report tracking global expansion of China-linked hacking. State-backed hacking groups increasingly seek long-term system access over data theft. Videri Labs counted 210 China-based state-backed hacking groups, compared with 112 linked to Russia and 55 associated with Iran. The report said activity from the groups reached 178 countries last year. Taiwan's National Security Bureau said in January that cyber attacks directed at government infrastructure averaged 2.63 million daily in 2025. The agency said the figure was 113% higher than when it began compiling statistics in 2023. In Kyoto news, Japan PM meets CEO of Taiwan's TSMC on advanced chip production in Kumamoto. The chief executive of Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company told Japanese Prime Minister Sane Takeuchi on Thursday of the company's plan to mass produce semiconductors using 3-nanometer technology, which is a first in Japan. The government sees domestic chip output as contributing to economic security and supports Japanese chip venture Rapidus Corp., which plans to mass produce 2-nanometer chips from the second half of 2027. In ABC News Australia, Perth Australia Day rally attempted bombing declared terrorist act. A 31-year-old man was last week charged with throwing what police described as a homemade fragment bomb filled with ball bearings and screws into the crowd which had gathered in central Perth. Western Australia Premier Roger Cook confirmed that the man has also been charged with engaging in a terrorist act. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, self-driving Waymo cars could soon hit Portland's streets under proposed Oregon bill. House Bill 4085 would allow companies such as Waymo to deploy fully automated cars in Oregon with no human driver on board, including for delivery services or passenger rides. Waymo offers those services in several major U.S. cities and has been eyeing Portland as it rapidly expands to more states. The bill would put the Oregon Department of Transportation in charge of authorizing and regulating autonomous vehicle operators and setting insurance and safety regulations. In the Spokane Spokesman Review, WSU, Report for America, plan to fund reporter in every Washington county over the next 5 years. Each of the 39 counties in Washington state should have a designated reporter by 2029 through a new collaboration between Washington State University and Report for America. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. In Carney's footsteps, Vancouver's mayor promises to visit China if reelected. And exclusive, inside the Whitecaps BC Place contract. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Central Community School in Port Coquitlam, BC. In 2005, the students founded Real Acts of Caring to spread kindness in their school and in their community. In 2026, February 8th to 14th is Real Acts of Caring Week across British Columbia. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 8th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 8th of February in 1960, the Hollywood Walk of Fame was founded? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca and bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.